Hi, everybody. Today is Friday, March 7th, 2025, and our friend Larry Johnson is back with us from Moscow. How's it going there, Larry?
I'm late and I don't have my Florida insurance. So you may not be able to take anything I say seriously. I'm not rocking Tommy Bahama. I look like a security guard.
Let's get started, Larry, with Donald Trump and the way that he's trying to, in his latest
Who?
talk with the press, Donald
Who
Trump.
did? Is he like president or something?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It
Okay.
sounds. Here is Larry.
My,
Here is.
I asked about him in Moscow. They go, "Who?" Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. He said, here is what he said about Russia, Larry.
Russia, if I may, President Putin is bombing Ukraine.
Yeah.
Do you still believe him when he tells you that he wants peace?
You know, I believe him. I believe him. I think we're doing very well with Russia. But right now they're bombing the hell out of Ukraine, and Ukraine, they don't
Yep.
have the cards. As you know, we're meeting in Saudi Arabia on sometime next week early. And we're talking, would I find that in terms of getting a final settlement, it may be easier dealing with Russia, which is surprising because they have all the cards. I mean, they're bombing the hell out of them right now. And I put a statement in, a very strong statement. Can't do that. Can't do that.
Mr. President.
We're trying to help them. And Ukraine has to get on the ball and get a job done. Michael, could you come up here? I see Michael back there. Good. I'm glad. He's traveling all over the world. I just saw him come in the door.
Yeah, thank
Could
you.
you give a little definition of what's going on, please?
Sure. Well, the president has been crystal clear, and he's been clear to all sides. The fighting has to stop. Both sides need to get to the table. We had a good engagement. Both leaders have said.
Here is Larry, what they're talking about, that Donald Trump, he's trying to somehow convince Zelensky to find to get along with, to get in line with the United States in terms of what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah.
How do you see the way that Donald Trump is trying to manage the situation? He's going to have, by the way, he's, as he mentioned, he's going to have a meeting with a American delegation and Ukrainian delegation in Saudi Arabia to talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he is actually going to go there to meet, but there will be meetings of those two delegations. Reports I've heard from sources I consider to be credible is that the American delegation, Marco Rubio, Witkoff, and Waltz, were extremely impressed with the Russian delegation. I mean, Sergei Lavrov, Raymond Governor emphasis is on the last syllable, Lavrov. They were incredibly impressed with how smart they were. Now they're going to meet with the Ukrainian crowd. Let's just say that Umarov is not going to be confused with Albert Einstein. He's not known as a really bright guy. I think the United States will immediately see the difference. But from Russia's standpoint, they don't have to give the United States anything. The United States has no leverage over them. If there were some reports late this afternoon, I've heard that Trump has vowed that if Russia doesn't stop, he's going to really toughen up the sanctions. I think the technical term from Russia's standpoint is they could give a shit. They don't care. There's nothing that the United States can threaten to do to Russia apart from going nuclear that Russia can't handle and that frankly Russia is not willing to concede. You see, the Trump team labors under this false notion that Russia's going to have to make some concessions because that's how negotiations work. Except the Russians with their past negotiations with the United States have been raped not just taken advantage of, but raped by the United States, by Western Europe. It happened when the Trump administration or the George W. Bush administration walked away from the intermediate or from the anti-ballistic missile treaty agreement. That was in the summer of 2001, I believe.
Yeah. ABM treaty.
Yeah, the anti-ballistic missile. Then in 2007, you know, Putin spoke to the Munich Security Conference and made it very clear, hey, don't bring NATO any closer. If you go back and look at the record documented extensively by Scott Horton, who I think you've had on your show, his book Provoked. Anybody wants to read it, you know, wants to know the history, just get Scott's book. It is laid out, you know, with exquisite detail. And the United States went out of its way to screw over Russia and to bolster Ukraine's military capabilities to challenge Russia. They did it under George H.W. Bush. It was really accelerated under Bill Clinton. And then it continued under George W. Bush. And then, you know, we get to, you know, now in 2022, where the Russians say, we got no option but to invade. The Russians are looking at this and, you know, Trump is the one that sent arms and weapons, you know, proud. Oh, I sent javelins. Okay. You sent weapons to kill Russians. The Russians are not pleased. Just, you know, and imagine if Russia was claiming, hey, we sent surface terror missiles to Mexican drug cartels and they blew up American aircraft. Would we be going, oh, that's okay, man, no problem? No, we'd be outraged. That's an act of war, which is what the United States has been doing against Russia. Russia, fortunately, has not wanted to escalate to fight the West, at least now. Not to say that they couldn't in the future. Then Minsk 1 and Minsk 2, those agreements didn't involve necessarily the United States, but it did involve pledges by Europe to back up the French, to basically back up the Ukrainians. But what they really did was used it secretly as a time to rearm Ukraine to attack Russia. And then, you know, the March, April 2022, sabotage of the peace talks. So we're not looking at just one instance. We're looking at time after time after time after time. I keep repeating it, where the West has betrayed Russia. The West has not negotiated in good faith. And now Trump wants the Russians to make concessions. You know, the Russians, they're not crude like this, but they might as well be saying, hey, kiss my ass. You know, what does Russia require? Putin's already made it clear. Ukraine has got to hold new elections. Russia's not talking to anybody in the Ukrainian government until they hold new elections. And they'll meet with the United States maybe next week and politely tell them, look, Volodymyr Zelensky is no longer the legitimate president of Ukraine. He has ignored the constitution of Ukraine. He's declared himself a unilateral dictator. He has continued to attack opposition political parties. We're not going to deal with him. He has no credibility. Yes, we want to talk peace. Ukraine needs to hold fresh elections. They need to get an election where we have somebody who now has popular support, who now has been legally elected that we can talk to. And we'll happily talk. But until then, we're going to continue this war. We're going to continue to kill Ukrainian soldiers. We're going to continue to recapture territory Ukraine took from Russians and turn it over to Russians. And you know what? The Russians will turn around to the United States and say, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Oh, you want to impose more sanctions? Right now, the only real economic sanction would be on fertilizer. 90% of U.S. supply of fertilizer comes out of Russia. So cut off the supply of fertilizer. Go ahead, do it. What does it do to your farming community? All of a sudden, they're not growing food. All of a sudden, you got people going hungry. So the United States holds no strong cards in this regard. Just like they tell Ukraine, you ain't got no cards. Well, I'm here to tell you, Donald Trump, with respect to Russia, you ain't got no cards either, brother. You out of cards.
Yeah, he literally mentioned, Larry, in the second part of what I played for you. He said that Russia holds all the cards in terms of what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah. Right.
How do you see the way that Donald Trump sees the situation in Ukraine? It seems that the Trump administration is trying to behind the scene talk with Zelensky's opposition. I don't know, Poroshenko, Tymoshenko, maybe Zeluzhny.
Zeluzhny. About the Poroshenko. Person. Don't forget Poroshenko.
Yeah, Poroshenko. All of these people who may be interested in being the next president of Ukraine, is that if they get a new presidential election, do you think that would change the mindset of the government in Ukraine?
Oh, yeah, potentially, because by that point, Ukraine may not even be able to continue existing. So this will get down to Russia willing to offer the Ukrainians a deal to survive with some hope for the future, with the possibility that they might still have access to the Black Sea through Odessa, but not guaranteed, but that they'll be able to run helicopters, etc. But, you know, Russia, in its negotiating posture, it's going to tell the United States, look, we're winning this war on the ground. Your guys continue to bomb inside and strafe inside Russian territory, and they're doing that with your assistance, so you're aiding and abetting. You're as guilty at killing this, you know, any civilians as if you pulled the trigger yourself, if you're flying the aircraft as a pilot. So, you know, Russia's under no pressure. They, like I said, 90% of the nitrogen imported into the United States for fertilizer comes out of Russia, 90%. They've got maybe 6% tied up with nuclear fuel. Again, my understanding is the nuclear fuel is a minor portion of what the United States gets out of Russia. It's like 8%, not a major part. But, you know, the United States, you know, can try to go with some other options. But they don't. The point is, they don't have any real leverage over Russia right now. The United States, it's limited in its leverage, and the Russians are going to continue to do what the Russians do. They're not going to surrender under no pressure to surrender. And Tulsi Gabbard and her crew better disabuse Trump of that real quick. Go back and say, sir, yeah, we've been reporting for 6 months that, you know, Ukraine's got them on the run. Well, sir, we're here to tell you that's not true. Not true at all. In fact, it's just the opposite. We'll see if that comes to pass.
How do you feel right now in Moscow? How do they feel about the way that Donald Trump is trying to play the game between the United States and Russia?
Well, overall, there's optimism saying, you know, at least Trump has acknowledged the critical role that Russia played in winning World War II, that the Soviets played back then. And that Russians understand that Trump's willing to talk. I mean, the fact that I'm here, I'm here in Moscow as well with Judge Napolitano. And, you know, there's, you know, the Russians. People keep saying, you know, we've got talking points, we're repeating Putin talking points. Sadly, I've not had a chat with Vladimir Putin. And that cheap bastard hasn't even sent me a check. So everything I'm saying is of my own volition and will. And, you know, I'm kidding about it being a cheap bastard. We've not had any financial arrangement. I'm just capable of reading and doing some independent thinking and recognize that when you look at the number of military bases overseas with armed combat troops capable of carrying out attacks in other countries, you wind up with over 700, some people say the number's high, to 750 U.S. military facilities. How many does Russia have? Hardly any. Do you know what the shortest book in the world is? It's titled Imperial China's Successful Military Adventures. You know why that's such a short book? Because they haven't had any. Yeah. Their last out of country experience was in 1979, and the Vietnamese kicked their ass. So it's not like the Chinese are some juggernaut of military power out, tearing up the world. So, you can take all these things into reality. And there is optimism that, Trump at least says he's willing to talk. And Trump seems keen on trying to promote peace. And, Trump has authorized his people to go talk to the Russians. So that's good. We're far better off talking and threaten to kill each other.
Larry Maloney says that they can provide a NATO-level security guarantee for Ukraine without Ukraine being a member of NATO. Is that achievable? Is that practical?
Not only is it not practical, it's nonsense. You know what the second shortest book in the world is? Successful Italian Invasions of Other Countries. come on. Look, Italians are great at pasta. They're great at pizza. They got some great wines. Food, wine, great art, great. Fighting, not so much. You can make the case the mafia does a pretty good job of maybe cleaning up in house, but we're not talking that. We're talking the Italians want to go toe to toe with the Russians. Yeah, that didn't work out so well last time they tried it in the fall of 1942, going into the early winter of 1943, in January, when a lot of Italian troops got their asses kicked at a place called Stalingrad. So, Maloney's just, she's talking out of part of her body that normally is not used for verbal expression. It's normally used for flatulence. And she should try to just confine herself to flatulence instead of saying something like that that's so stupid.
Larry, did you watch Emmanuel Macron talking about that Russia by 2030 gonna be much bigger, much stronger? They're gonna attack us. We have to get prepared for that. Right now we have three countries who are focused on the case of Ukraine and supporting Ukraine: United Kingdom, Germany, and France. All of these countries attacked Russia once, and they have been defeated by Russia.
Yeah.
And right now they're talking about Russia attacking them. What's the game? Or is that the game against Donald Trump and the new policy in Washington? Is that the game? I don't see that would have happened Kamala Harris, under Joe Biden. But it seems that they're getting more radical. Your take on that?
Well, if I'm Trump, nip this in the bud real quick. Get a vote in the House. I make it clear that nobody on the NATO side is going to be able to supply anything to Ukraine. And, you know, get a law that, hey, we're done selling our equipment that could be used in Ukraine to those characters. Let them build their own if they got them. They don't have it. You know, this is, you know, take you back to the 1970s when Howard Cosell was on Monday Night Football. This is way before your time. You weren't even born yet. And they had the former Dallas Cowboys player, Dandy Don Meredith. And he'd start singing at the end, you know, when the game looked like the other side wasn't going to win, he'd start singing, "Turn out the lights. The party's over." That's what we should be singing for Ukraine. Turn out the lights. The party's over. They ain't coming back. So it's just the denial of people like Maloney and Germany and France and England. They're probably big on what's called fantasy football. That's where you pretend like you own a team and you get into a league with other people and you draft. You get to select players that are actually playing for real world teams. Like, I don't know who the number one player for Manchester United is right now, but you load your team up and then you get to score each week based on how many points they score, how many assists, how many blocks, et cetera. And then at the end of the year, you add that up and whoever's got the most points wins. And this is where people get to play act and imagine that, oh, I'm a professional football coach. Well, that's sort of what Maloney and Macron and Schultz Prime Minister Starmer of the UK, that's what they're doing. They're playing fantasy football. Yeah, we're going to put two brigades in. How are they armed? Well, they don't have weapons yet, but we're just going to imagine them that they'll have them. Oh, that's a great strategy, guys. Yeah. Europe is, you know, you can't even call them a mile wide and a mile deep because they're not. Mile wide and an inch deep. They're not even a mile wide. They're probably, you know, 10 yards wide with an inch deep water. You know, they got nothing. But they can sit there and tell themselves, oh, yeah, we're big, we're brave, we're tough. We're going to really take it to those Russians. And Russians sit back, okay, if you're going to attack us, that's an act of war. And we'll pursue it as a war. Frankly, they've held back up until now, Russia. Once the decision is made to pull the plug on this whole operation, they're done.
I don't know if you've seen the article in the Financial Times that the United Kingdom, together with Germany and France, are trying to do everything. They're saying that it doesn't matter what the United States is going to do with Russia and whatever agreement they're going to reach, they're going to make it inoperative. They're inoperable. How are they able to do that? Is that going to benefit? How is that going to benefit them if they do that?
No, it's not. Look, it's going to continue the war. And as long as this war goes on, more and more members of the faculty, the older ones, will start retiring. You know, I don't know who's doing gym class now, but guarantee you they're no longer going to have to worry about transgender this and transgender that, because kids that they're trying to transition are going to, be protected. So, they're out of touch with reality. And it's just across the board, whether it's the embracement of, you know, talking to Russians, like the whole transgender thing. Russians just shake their head and go, what are these people talking about? And yet those people want to come have serious discussions with us about peace in Ukraine, but they want to continue arming them. And they want to continue providing them weapons that they don't have. I mean, you know, candidly, Germany, France, United Kingdom, Italy, all get together, build as many damn 155 millimeter artillery shells as you can. And you're not even going to match what Russia produces in 1 month. You know, if they're lined up to produce for 6 months, they'll produce in 6 months what Russia will do in 1 month. How does Ukraine stay in that kind of fight? They don't. So that's where, you know, you listen to Maloney. I mean, she's attractive, she's articulate, and she's delusional.
It seems that there is an article in Financial Times, Larry. It says that Europe must trim its welfare state to build up a warfare state. It seems that they're prepared to do that. They don't yeah. see it that way. They don't see that in a long run they would lose. They're trying to create some sort of war between Europe and Russia, which doesn't exist. It doesn't exist, but they're trying to make it. They're trying to say that it's gonna be the future of the relationship between Europe and Russia.
Yeah, there's no future there. This is, you know, when I walked through this World War II museum today that's on the outskirts of Moscow, really one of the most profound moving experiences I've ever had in my life. I've been to the Louvre, been to the British War Museum, been to the pyramids in Cairo, outside of Cairo, been to Chichen Itza, seen the Mayan monuments, been on the battlefield of Gettysburg, walked the airfields on Pearl Harbor on Ford's Island, where those attacks took place in 1941. I've never seen a museum like this. The Russians built it because 27 million Russians died. So Judge Napolitano and I are sitting at lunch today. There's an eminent professor, I'm not going to say his name. There was the dean of the school that we were visiting. There is a former Russian diplomat sitting at the table. And then there is the man who's invested his money in building up this incredible school. And I asked him the question. I said, with respect to the Great Patriotic War, and then there's Judge Napolitano and I sitting there. I said, with respect to the Great Patriotic War, did you lose any of your ancestors? Did you lose a grandfather, a grandmother, great-grandfather, great-grandmother, uncle, whatever? Every single Russian at that table raised their hand. They had lost somebody. I turned to the judge and I said, "Do you lose any of your family die in World War II?" "No." "How about my family?" "No." That's the difference. In Russia, they lost 27 million people. That means almost every Russian family was touched by that war and suffered loss. They remember that. In the United States, hardly anybody died. Yeah, our total casualties were like, you know, if I've seen the number 470,000. And I challenge anybody, go to Google, go to a Perplexity AI, type in, how many people did the United States lose in World War II? You're gonna get answers all over the board. The U.S. government can't even come up with a clear, concise, precise answer. But let's go with the 450,000. That includes the numbers that died in Europe and North Africa, and it died in the campaign in the Philippines against the Japanese. Sorry, my earpiece fell out. The Russians, in the one battle in Stalingrad, lost twice as many soldiers in one battle as the United States lost in the entire war against Japan and Germany, the war in Europe, Africa, and the war in the Pacific. That's why Russia is not eager to put their security at risk. They faced the consequences of being unprepared to fight and being almost decimated by the Nazi invasion. And they lost, almost, you know, like I said, almost 27 million people. We in the West, you know, to be impolite about it, we got our heads so far up our ass, we cannot see the light of day. And we do all this tough talk about, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, France, Macron, we're going to war. You don't have an army. The army of the United Kingdom, the army of France, the army of Germany, it's a damn joke. And yet they persist in lying to people about their military prowess and capability. And if they decide to follow through on their delusions, they very well could spark a third world war, because Russia is not going to sit back and allow themselves to be attacked. And Russia is not about to go out to try to conquer Europe. It's so ridiculous that Europe continues to point the finger at the Russians and say, oh, you're an imperial power. You want to rebuild the Russian Empire. Okay, let's go with the height of the Russian Empire, with the Soviet Union. How many countries in Asia did Russia invade and conquer? Zero. They went into Afghanistan in 1980 and lived to regret that. How many countries in Africa did the Russians invade and conquer and set up a colonial rule? Zero. Same for South America, same for Central America. But look at the United States. Look at all of our military misadventures overseas. That's why the Russians are worried. What the hell is the United States going to do? Because we're like a serial rapist. We're the ones that have been out raping, pillaging, causing mayhem, not the Russians. But, you know, you say that and all of a sudden you're a puppet of Putin. I'm doing Putin talking points. No, I'm just reporting the facts as they are. And instead of attacking me personally, anybody disagrees, deal with the goddamn facts. Real simple.
Also amazing, Larry, that Donald Trump said that Europeans, in his address to the Congress, he said that the money that Europeans paid Russia to buy Russian gas is higher than
than what they spent on armaments. Surprise.
So we know that Russia wants a better relationship with Europe, with the West. They don't want this sort of, I don't know, chaos that is happening right now. Yeah. But it doesn't seem that the Europeans are coming out of that sort of shell that they're making for themselves. I don't know, that sort of bubble, which doesn't mean anything when it comes to the relationship between Russia and Europeans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're talking openly. Macron's, we'll spread around our nuclear weapons. We'll share it with all the other Europeans so we can use them against Russia. What's Russia supposed to think? They're not talking about sending boxes of candy and bouquets of flowers. They're talking about going to war with Russia. And Russia's, they can't ignore that. The general staff is going to go, okay, we got to prepare contingencies. And one of the contingencies is a preemptive strike to take out any such capabilities that are moved. We in the West, we need to get off our war kick. All it's doing is, war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again.
Larry, Telegraph reported today that the United States, Donald Trump, is considering pulling troops out of Germany and maybe deploying troops to Hungary. How is that gonna, is that a reaction from what they're talking about in Germany, the way that they're trying to deal with Ukraine, or is that something else that is happening in the mind of the Trump administration?
Well, it's a way to send a message to Germany that you're not happy with their failure to endorse or follow a U.S. position. But again, why is the United States then moving the troops from Germany into Hungary, which means you're moving the troops closer to the Russian border, which is sending the exact opposite message? Yeah, we don't threaten you. We're just pissed off at the Germans. So that's why we're going to deploy this division on your border. Don't worry. Yeah, the Russians are going to worry. And they've already indicated they'll view any action like that by the United States as a hostile action. They've warned us. Don't do this. Don't do that. Stay away. You've sent signals already, Trump to his credit. Yep. Russia, won the Second World War. We were happy to help, but without the Russian sacrifice, that war wouldn't have happened. The Russians lost 27 million, far cry above what we lost in the West. They just go down the list of different accomplishments and where they're at. So, we'll see. We'll see what Donald Trump actually does. He's made some comments today talking about, if Russia doesn't stop doing X, Y, and Z and come to the table to negotiate, by God, we're going to implement more sanctions like we talked about earlier. Well, sanctions are great when you actually control the world. 3 years ago, Russia finally woke up and said, we can't trust those damn Americans. We're going to have to go our own way. They'll go out and they're already coming up with a solution that involves BRICS, involves China, involves India, South Africa, Brazil, and the United States will be left alone, looking in.
Yeah, well, what's so positive, Larry, today that you learned that Donald Trump is talking about, he thinks of the nuclearization of the United States together with Russia. He thinks that they can come up with some sort of solution for that. Is that going to be positive in the mind of Russians with what's going on right now?
If I was the Russians, I'd tell the United States, niet, not interested. You had your chance. Because right now, the United States, hey, let's get that Intermediate Nuclear Forces Agreement back in place. Why don't you say that was a good agreement. We're sorry we walked away from it. Well, who walked away from it? That was Donald Trump. And what did Russia do in response? They built a hypersonic missile called the Oreshnik that will wipe out, has the potential to wipe out European military forces across the board. And so the United States wants to open talks on that because the United States doesn't have any comparable weapon to that. But we would convince the right, give up that weapon, swear it off, and everything will be good. No. Russia's holding the Trump card. Let's hold the card. Either back the hell off, get your troops, get your asses out of our country, off of our land, or else we're going to take out your forces. It's up to you.
Larry, Fox News reported that Trump wrote a letter to Iran saying that he would rather make a deal with Iran rather than use weapons. And Iranian side is talking about that we'll not negotiate with the United States under pressure.
Yeah.
Here is what he said today to the press, Larry.
Thing you'll be talking about is Iran. What's going to happen with Iran? And there'll be some interest.
Let me just
read the next thing you'll be talking about is Iran. What's going to happen with Iran? And there'll be some interesting days ahead. That's all I can tell you. We're down to final strokes with Iran. That's going to be an interesting time. And we'll see what happens. But we're down to the final moments. We're at final moments. Can't let them have a nuclear weapon. I think that I would have had a deal within 1 month after the rigged election of 2020. They were all set to make a deal. And then when I lost, they saw this person who's a stupid person, very stupid person. And they said, let's not make a deal. And they were right. He took the sanctions off. They became rich under Biden. They went from having no money to having $300 billion.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm hoping that Iran is willing to talk to him and that his people are being reasonable. But we'll see. Iran's got the added advantage as it's backed by Russia. I've checked with some people here because, you know, even though the West is touting, well, the agreement that Iran signed on January 17th with Russia didn't explicitly say that Russia would come to their immediate defense. The language that's contained in their particular related to Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, if you read it carefully, it does absolutely obligate Russia to come fight on behalf of Iran. So, you know, Iran's got that in its back pocket, and it's going to pursue the negotiations. Russia will back Iran. Israel and the United States are not going to have a lot of leverage. And if Israel and the United States decide to attack Iran, they run the risk of facing a bigger, broader war with not only Russia, but China coming to the aid of Iran.
I don't know if you're following the situation in Syria. It's getting so much critical and they're fighting each other.
Yeah.
Different groups there.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think I've said this close to the outset. HTS, Jalani, you know, or Sharma, or they call him, you know, Charmin, you know, the toilet paper.
Al Sharman,
extra absorbent, you know, capability. They're not native Syrians. They don't have a tribal structure to fall back on. They are probably actually more alien to Syria than Bashar al-Assad ever was. So they're going to be attacked, and the attacks will continue. And attacks will probably escalate. They don't have the smuggling network that exists on these desert tribes that are facilitating the movement of cash and weapons. Cash that flows in, and weapons that flow in. So the Syrian, these outsiders, they don't have control over those tribal groups. And that's what people need to understand. These tribal groups that exist in Syria, you know, the majority of them are Sunni Muslim anyway, but they don't feel an affinity or a loyalty to HTS or Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, al-Jalani, or now like Sharman or Shara or something, you know, some ridiculous made up Western name.
So thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. At 4 p.m. Eastern, East Coast of the United States, I'm going to have a talk with Colonel Wilkerson and Ambassador Chas Freeman and compare it just to...
Yeah, they'll have a lot to say about, you know, Donald Trump's empty saber-rattling. Saber-rattling gone awry. Just say, ugh. Anyway,
thank you so much, Larry. Have a great time there. When are you going to be back to Florida?
I'll let you know about Monday because I'm supposed to do a radio interview or a TV interview with someone here. Then it depends. I don't know if I'm headed to the airport or waiting another day to come home. But hopefully we can hook something up on Monday.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, my friend, you have a good weekend.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.